Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
And good morning, everybody. Good to have you with us on a midweek edition of Sports Daily. Wednesday, by my check of the calendar, 869-1240 is the way that you join the show. That's the I Got It at Tad's Locker Room Hotline. Shane Dennis on one side of the aisle, yours truly the other. Good to have you along. 2 hours, 28 minutes, a very snappily played game one of the World Series. Very satisfying to those who love pitching. The quickest game in 25 years of the World Series, Shane. Pretty good start to things last night.
And forgive me if this sounds hot take-ish, but I found that game last night boring.
Really?
Both teams combined to go 0-for-2 with runners in scoring position. There were three home runs, and that was it. While there was great pitching, no question about it, we can get into the nuts and bolts of that. Clayton Kershaw, I think, is long since put in the rear view that he's not a big World Series postseason type pitcher. Plus, he also got through the seventh inning, which had been a really rough patch for him. But there were no real meaningful pitches thrown with the game on the line or an inning that would turn the tide on the line. With all due respect to Chris Taylor, was that the first pitch of the game he hit out? I think it was.
Yeah.
And
sure
then
was.
Turner had a two-run home run off Keuchel. He basically made two mistakes. Dallas Keuchel did. Clayton Kershaw made one. And Alex Bregman hit that one out of the park. So for everything that we kind of built up between the starting pitching matchup, which lived up to the hype, nobody besides those guys that went deep, those three guys on those three mistakes, really did anything. And so I was left, while 2 hours and 28 minutes is great, you know, we didn't have to stay up all night to watch it and talk about it, but I didn't find much drama in that game last night, and maybe I'm in the vast minority, but I kept waiting for something to happen.
Who was behind the plate? Was it Phil Cousy behind the plate last night?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, let's start there because it was an incredibly well-pitched game, and you had two guys dealing, two guys that were that got in the zone quickly and that stayed there generally. But I got to tell you, and I know that I'm a little inconsistent here. On one hand, you want a consistent strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you really ask for. I thought the zone was voluminous last night. I thought it was way too big. Everything that these guys were throwing up there were strikes. Mm-hmm. Yes or no?
Yeah. It was noticeable even without that pitch tracks or the box.
Right.
This was a game Eric Gregg would be proud of.
Kidding.
Now, they didn't go Phil Cousy didn't go 4 inches outside and 3 inches inside necessarily, but he was calling a lot of them down and down and away from right-handers, a ball width either low or outside or both. Now, are the hitters – well, they got to turn the page because they got a game today, but – I wonder if they both, mostly the Astros, though, went back to the dugout mumbling and basically, hey, Kershaw is good enough without Phil Cousy, you know, calling balls strikes.
Right.
And that's the case with any legendary pitcher, and Kershaw is one. He doesn't need any help. Make him throw it over the plate. And there were some noticeable balls that were called strikes, and more than just a few.
Yeah, and noticeably down. I mean, the strike zone was low, really low last night, I thought. Like I said, I don't know how much it changed the configuration of the game. You had two guys, obviously, that were locked in, and once they got locked in and they got into a rhythm with with Blue, then you know, then all of a sudden that's how it's going to be. I mean, and those guys, they get a couple of strikes that they know aren't strikes. Why wouldn't they keep going back to the same spot? Mm-hmm. So I thought it was, from a standpoint of drama, it was lacking. The drama was supplied by the fact that it was the first game of the World Series. John Cena doing the intro on the VO, rather, on the intro, mm-hmm. to the, that was fine, and you know, all of the celebs that were there,
and it was 103 degrees, so we had to play that up a little bit.
You had that going on. You could feel the heat coming off the screen. So. But I think more than anything, you come away with Kershaw putting away whatever demons that they have, I think, clearly been exercised now. I mean, he still gives up home runs, but he's going to do that every now and then because he elevates on occasion, and guys take him out of the ballpark. But he was really Kershaw-esque last night and has been through this postseason. So... the Dodgers are back in the World Series. They're back in the World Series to a large degree because of Clayton Kershaw. He was the MVP of the National League Championship Series, and he went out and got the first one of the World Series. So can't complain about Clayton Kershaw. He's lived up to the billing.
And a lot of what the criticism that he got was due in large part to the seventh innings of postseason games where he'd give you six good ones, and then in the seventh, he'd melt down, and then that would...
Yeah, that Cardinals game.
That muddied up his numbers. He had a 20 ERA in seventh innings of postseason games before last night, and then last night he goes 1-2-3, and he ends up allowing just three hits, didn't walk anybody, struck out 11, only threw 83 pitches, and you don't have to run him out there in the eighth, even though he'd only thrown 83, because he's got that lockdown bullpen that continued to do just that. Brendan Morrow and Kenley Jansen did their thing, six up and six down. And so now it's 1-0 Dodgers. But I thought that, and this probably won't be the case tonight because Rich Hill is a different kind of pitcher, different kind of stuff. But when we talked about the strike zone being a little bit larger, but I still thought that the Astros took a lot of hittable pitches.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like they, you know, if ever, and he wasn't on the ropes, obviously, because you know they didn't have anybody in scoring position, nobody all night long.
Right.
But there were some hitters counts that they had, and for a team that doesn't strike out very much, you can't let Kershaw just get back in the count or get ahead in the count by letting him lay one in there. I mean, they're an aggressive hitting team and a team that relies on the home run, but. And they were tied up in knots. I got to give credit to Kershaw. Now it's not just that they let him, you know, strike out 11 and not walk anybody, but you got a mix like his. You need, if you're sitting on something and you get it, you better not let it go.
Well, yeah, absolutely. He gives you about a quarter of a pitch and at bat to get squared up, maybe. I mean, if he makes a mistake, you're fortunate. He doesn't give you much. God, and then he starts changing speeds and starts looping it in there, and my goodness, he was fun to I thought he was fun to watch, and I thought Keuchel was pretty fun to watch. I mean, he makes the one mistake to Turner in the sixth. Other than that, you know, I mean, he was pretty damn good.
Well,
I mean,
the reason why Kershaw is so fun to watch is he got four like video game pitches, you know,
big
slow curveball and then the hard slider, and he's got a changeup, and his fastball isn't what it used to be anymore, but it's fun to watch him throw all those pitches. Keuchel's boring because he got like 1.5 pitches. He got a sinker and he cuts it every once in a while in on the hands of the right-hand batters, which
boy, that sinker, though.
Yeah, but that cutter that he left up to Turner leaves the yard, you know. But other than that, he's a ground ball machine, doesn't strike out as many guys as Kershaw. They go about it in different ways. Keuchel had, earlier in the postseason, had his share of big strikeout games. But, yeah, I think that's in large part why Kershaw is so fun to watch, because it's like you watching a video game. All these pitches going all these different angles, And he never walks anybody, too. So that's a tough one. Astros took one on the chin last night.
They did take one on the chin, and I'm not so sure that the matchup tonight isn't potentially more entertaining with Verlander and Hill, just because of the different types of guys that they are. Verlander has been such a postseason revelation. Can he continue that? Hill has the opportunity now to put the Dodgers up two games to none. The Astros haven't won a game in the World Series. This is their second World Series. They're 0-5 now, right?
Yep, that's right.
So... So they've got that. I'm not.
Well, here's
not
what
they
need
to
do. You got Verlander. So there's one. They need to channel their inner Enos Cabell and go back to those rainbow tops. You know, the softball tops, the pullovers.
Give me J.R. Richard.
Give the J.R. Richard almighty. Tops and come out with those and show people you're not messing around anymore. Old school.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Old school Astros tops with the orange hats with the white H on the middle of it.
It's all anyone would be talking about pregame.
Heck yeah. And
you'd sell a bunch of extra Astro stuff. Yeah, you really would. Good stuff. Good stuff. Granted, not the most interesting of games. I don't know if I would go boring. You went boring. I'm trying to sit there. I'm trying to think. Was I bored last night? Because the game was just over so quickly. I'm not even sure I had a chance to settle into boredom.
Well, let me clarify, because I'm not a we-need-to-shorten-baseball-games guy. I'll watch a four-hour game if it's entertaining. I don't mind. I know that's how baseball is. Baseball doesn't have a clock. And, you know, when you go 228, the automatic knee-jerk would be like, oh, it was a well-played game. It was quick. It was a good game. Well, it was a good game for two guys. And I just wanted a little more, drama. But the World Series is a World Series. You get what you get. And you don't throw a fit. So I'm not going to make too big of a stink about it. But it was, and we talked about this yesterday too. It was called by Joe Buck. We had a sighting of Vin Scully, but didn't hear from him. And the Hall of Fame has announced its Ford Frick Award finalist. And these are for the finest broadcasters in baseball. And in alphabetical order, they are. And get your thoughts on some of these guys. Buddy Blattner, Joe Buck, Bob Costas, Dizzy Dean, Don Drysdale, Al Michaels, Joe Morgan, and Pee Wee Reese. And the winner will be announced on December 13th. And an electorate of 11 living Frick Award recipients and four broadcast historians will vote. And among those still alive that have a Frick Award is the Royals' own Denny Matthews,
yes,
Tony Kubek, Dick Enberg, Marty Brenneman, and others. So there's your list. It's a pretty good one, and they'll announce the winner on the finalist on December 13th.
Joe Morgan was really good in his day. I thought I liked Joe Morgan.
I thought Joe Morgan was good in his day, but. Toward the end, it was more of a he turned into kind of a grumpy get off my lawn. This isn't the big red machine guy, you know. He never hesitated to inject the big red machine into a broadcast or back when I played, which turned some people off toward the end. But he was very insightful, I think, toward the beginning of his broadcast career. And then you've got picture painters like Al Michaels and Bob Costas, and the guy that Denny Matthews. Basically broke into broadcasting with Buddy Blattner. He was the play-by-play guy for the Royals when Denny got the job when the Royals came to Kansas City.
Although with all due respect to a very august group, I mean, Bob Costas has got to get – doesn't Bob Costas have to get into that at some particular point?
Well,
it's been such a great, consistent voice and in such an intelligent voice for the game of baseball. Not just as a commentator or even play-by-play guy, but as a social a voice for the game, largely. I think Costas and Costas has done so much, and I know a lot of people tie Costas to the Olympics.
Al Michaels too.
And Al Michaels certainly, no question. But Bob Costas for me is tied to the game of baseball. And I know that he's done Olympics, and he's done a lot of different things. He actually got his start doing the ABA in St. Louis. So, I mean, basketball was the game that actually he broke into, quote-unquote, the big time in. But I still equate Bob Costas very much as a voice of baseball.
Yeah, and Al Michaels was a Monday Night Baseball guy too.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked,
sure was.
And he worked with one of the guys that rest in peace. That's up for it, Don Drysdale. He was an analyst with him, and of course, we heard Al year after year on Monday Night Baseball when there was one game to watch on Monday. By the way, and you wanted to watch it, you better not miss it. But I just hope that, and no matter who wins it, I hope that, and I know the voters won't probably let this cloud their judgment, but because Al Michaels and Bob Costas both are so kind of all over the place with, and to their credit, you know, they do all kind of different sports.
And that's why they're all over the place, because they're so
damn good
at what they
do. Right, you're right, because they're
so
good.
My goodness.
But when you have, and luckily, you have the, like I said, the ones that have won the award before voting on it, and four historians / columnists voting on it. And among those that I didn't mention, Tim McCarver, John Miller, Vin Scully, Bob Uecker, those are the guys voting on this. So I would hate to have to try to pare it down to one, because all of those guys in their own right, I mean, that's why they're up for the award, but they've put their stamp on the game of baseball. Pee Wee Reese and Dizzy Dean, they're not quite like Joe Morgan or Don Drysdale, you know?
I'm kind of surprised that Tony Kubek got in before Pee Wee Reese. Pee Wee Reese actually predated Tony Kubek. I remember Pee Wee Reese. My first memory of national baseball guys are Kurt Gowdy and Pee Wee Reese. That's how old I am. Kurt Gowdy and Pee Wee Reese.
Well, John Miller's already in. You know, he's already got the Frick Award ahead of these other guys.
He's damn good, too.
He is damn
good,
I hear you.
John Miller's really good, man. He's really good. I mean, we're splitting hairs now, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you get nominated for something like this, it's pretty thoughtful and comes from a place of deep thinking. And all of them are just really talented kind of guys that maybe in their own time all get in one way or the other. I don't know how it works, but
they look
see.
Like they're all deserving to me, but you just can't go all in at the same time. And as I say on every time we have this discussion, regardless of the sport, it's the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Pretty Good. And all these,
you know,
these guys are off the chart.
I'm sure that you listen to a fair amount of Royals on radio. I don't listen to it quite as much, obviously. I don't have quite the same access to it, but still listen to it on satellite on occasion. And how are you with Denny Matthews now? And where do you think he is as a guy now?
He is,
you know, he's very lone wolfish now.
Mm-hmm.
He is so old school in a time and a place in broadcasting, and I applaud his I'm not even going to say his unwillingness, because I think he is who he is, and I applaud that with Denny Matthews. It's part of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, you know, this is how I do it, and I don't make any apologies, and nor do I feel the need to change, for goodness sakes. But it's interesting listening to Denny now. I don't know if it's the same that it was 15 or 20 years ago. Vitality has never really been a true hallmark of his broadcast. Stop me when I'm wrong, okay?
You're not wrong. And and by the way, because it was extra innings against the Mets, that was Ryan Lefevre's innings, so he got to call the winner of that one. But back in 85, you can go all the way back and listen to the archives of 85. Even when Daryl Motley squeezed it for the last outs, no outs to go was the, you know, how he had his Jim Nance moment. But he's never had the pom-poms. He's never been a cheerleader. He's always been, and I think you could listen to a Royals game and hear Denny and feel like you're listening to a national broadcast because there's no we and us. He's pretty much right down the middle. Call it just like he sees it. And excitement and going Stuart Scott on a broadcast has never been him because he's an older guy. He's old school.
Sure he is.
But that's when he gets his biggest critics. That's when they come out. And I've been critical of him, too. Big moments.
Sound like big moments.
No. He's very, very, just like you and I are talking right now. That's his tone when the Royals hit a three-run triple. You kind of have to, if you talk about, and I do listen to a fair amount of Royals games, if you're doing something else and you're not totally zoned in, he's not going to raise his voice level to get you to perk up and say, oh, okay, something's happening.
Good way of putting it.
Something's happening here.
Good way of putting it.
He just continues to drone on with the same voice inflection level, and you would have to check your phone if you missed it, and he didn't say the score, because the Royals might just have scored a couple of runs and you weren't really locked into it.
And he's a wonderful historian of the game.
Yes.
If you pay attention and lock in a little bit, and I don't know if people do this now on radio, maybe they do still. If you lock, still a very good storyteller, and goodness knows has plenty of stories to tell. But I don't know. In this day and age, it's he's certainly different than virtually any other radio guy that I have a chance to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And
I can't speak for the other 30 whatever teams, but when it's Denny and whomever, Steve Fizeok or Ryan LaFever, most times it's Fizeok, because LaFever does the TV and then they kind of go back and forth. But Denny has his innings, and you have your innings.
Mm-hmm.
I'll talk the first two innings. You have the next two innings.
Yeah, and the twain shall never meet, right?
Not very often.
It's interesting.
Yep.
Every now and then, the off guy will interject, but boy, not very much. And you get the feeling that Fizeok is very careful to interject anything on Denny's time.
Yes, and it's unique in that way because there's no analyst. It's just Denny and Steve or Denny and Ryan, and they have their innings, and they're going to talk when their innings come up, and that's pretty much it.
Do you prefer a one-man booth or a two-man booth?
Two if it's the right person.
I think two if it's the right combination. You got to be pretty good to do it for an extended period in a one-man booth.
It's like we said yesterday, there are no more Vin Scullys walking around the earth anymore.
No.
And he was the one guy that could do a broadcast all by himself.
On a playing field all to himself. Back in a moment.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.